Tonight we are on concept 5, page C16, C16 in the back of the 2021 through 2023 Red Service Manual, which reads, throughout our world service structure, a traditional right of appeal ought to prevail, thus assuring us that minority opinion will be heard and that petitions for the redress of personal grievances will be carefully considered. Billy, you'll have until 2 minutes to the top of the hour. My time is now yours.
Thanks, Brooke. Billy Alcoholic. Welcome, everyone. I know I look like I'm a mess because I was just out in our horrible weather, draining the pool, taking care of shutters. Big prayers out to the people on the west side of Florida who hopefully have evacuated. Our side of Florida will get hit, but not like them. Anyway, it's good to be here. Wow, I see somebody from New Zealand here where I just was, so welcome. And we are on concept 5. And so I'm going to try to break this down as simple as possible because there are some confusing issues in concept 5 that get taken out of context all the time. And mostly because we're really talking about two separate things here. The concept says traditional right of appeal ought to prevail, thus assuring us that a minority opinion will be heard and the petitions for redress of personal grievances will be carefully considered. The concept is really talking about an appeal or petition to the conference or to the board. And in the first paragraph, it says, in light of the principal right of appeal, all minorities, whether in our staffs, committees, corporate boards, or among the trustees, should be encouraged to file minority reports whether they feel a majority to be in considerable error. And when a minority considers an issue to be such a grave one that a mistaken decision could seriously affect AA as a whole, it should then charge itself with the actual duty of presenting a minority report to the conference. There's a nuance there that is missed until you run into it, like banging your head in a wall, but it's really about what it says there, whether in our staffs, committees, corporate boards, or among the trustees. So who does it leave out there? It does not mention area delegates. It does not mention districts, and it does not mention groups or area assemblies. So we're in a trend right now in Alcoholics Anonymous where we have had some, I don't care how you feel about the plain language big book or the preamble. I hope you embrace how you feel and you accept the group conscience. None of my business. Fact of the matter is quite a lot of appeals are getting sent in to the General Service Board. Quite a lot of petitions. And I have been telling people for years that if you don't like what's in writing, you should send in an agenda item to change who can file an opinion, an appeal of a conference decision. Currently, and the process is in, I don't even know if I tagged it, but I'll let you know in a second if I did. I don't think I did, but minority appeal. The process is mentioned in an advisory action, and it must come from someone below the conference level in the upside-down triangle. The only people below the conference level in the upside-down triangle are the people in this right here. Staffs, committees, corporate boards, or trustees. That's the only people who are below the conference level. Some people act like this is brand new news. It's not new news. I'm not sure. I think what this concept, what that paragraph was talking about, was if a trustee or a director or a staff member disagree with their one of their decisions of a board or a committee, that one of their members can take it to the conference. That seems to be what they're talking about. Nowhere else in the concept does it talk about, because, and here we'll split the two in half, and I'll talk about the easier one, and then I'll come back to this one. The easier one is our often just called minority opinion. It's the thing that most people in AA have grown up with, that at your group, your district, your area, your intergroup committee, even at the General Service Conference, after most votes, there is a minority opinion. We have the minority opinion to support Tradition One. That's why we have it. We don't have it because Billy knows better than the other 120 people that voted the opposite way. That is not why we have it. It's not so that I can just remind everyone they just made a horrible error. It's because we believe so much in unity that even if I disagree, after a vote, I can state my minority opinion. Now, where this goes off the rails, because it often does, I'm going to explain the process at the conference, and then we'll talk about applying it to your group or district or area. At the General Service Conference of the United States and Canada, once a vote happens, there is a prevailing side and a non-prevailing side. That's the language we use because we don't like to say lose, right? So it's just kinder to say prevailing and non-prevailing. Minority becomes a tricky word because you need two-thirds to pass something at the conference. So it is possible to be in the majority yet give the minority opinion. That's the first tricky thing. If you have 135 voters and only, like, I don't know, 75 voted in favor of something, it would not pass. So the prevailing side is those who voted against it. The non-prevailing side is the people who voted for it who make up the majority. The minority opinion always goes to the non-prevailing side of a vote at the General Service Conference. Now, technically speaking, because I know there are people who are very technical here, the chair does not have to ask if anyone has a minority opinion. My experience at the conference is most chairs will ask if there's a minority opinion just to remind people. So, because if you don't remind them, and then you start the next piece of business, and then someone jumps up and says, oh, I was waiting for you to ask a minority opinion. So my experience is most chairs ask, is there minority opinion? If there is minority opinion, I just want to go to the, I want to read it to you because it's in the conference procedures. If you are looking for that, hold on 1 second. We call it reconsideration, not the minority opinion, by the way, at the conference. So a couple of people can get up and hopefully not say the same thing, and they can talk as to why they voted in the non-prevailing side. A motion to reconsider can be made only by a member who voted in the prevailing side. So let's just walk through that slowly. Let's say five or six people give minority opinion. They were in the non-prevailing side. Somebody can get up to the microphone or the chair could ask if there's a motion or reconsideration. But the person who makes the motion or reconsideration must be someone who voted in the prevailing side. It can be seconded by anybody, prevailing side or non-prevailing side. And only a simple majority is needed. If a simple majority votes to reconsider, then the old vote is basically thrown out like it did not happen. And discussion opens up on the original item that you just voted on. When that discussion ends, It could end a couple of ways. Death of discussion at the conference happens a multitude of ways. There's a natural death. There's just no one at the microphone. I'd like to think that's what happens most often. There's the unnatural death, which is that someone makes a motion to call the question. A motion to call the question says calling the question brings debate to a halt while conference members decide whether to proceed directly to a vote or go on to the debate. A motion to call the question must be the following. Must be made in order at the microphone. Must be made without comment. It requires a second. It is not debatable. And it requires a two-thirds vote. Now let's talk about that a little bit. It's made without comment. That's the alcoholic rule. Because we love to comment and then tell everyone else they don't get a right to comment. So you don't get to do that. You don't get to tell your war story and then say, and I'm going to make a motion to call the question. Once you say anything else, you lose your ability to call the question. It has to be seconded. It's not debatable, and it requires a two-thirds vote. So after the second round of discussion on an item, if the question is called or if there is nobody at the microphone, and question called and the vote is over two-thirds, or there's nobody at the microphone, a second vote takes place. There is no minority opinion on the second vote. The second vote stands as the group conscience. Now, that's the very technical general service conference procedure for dealing with minority opinion. We see this at groups and districts and areas, some and inner groups, used, which is only natural. When people say, why do we say we use modified Robert's Rules of Order? Well, you're not going to find a lot about the minority and non-prevailing sides in Robert's Rules of Order, right? The minority opinion is as AA as apple pie is, right? It is AA. It's as AA as coffee and cigarettes, you know? It's who we are. But what's the most common mistake we see when this is used in other levels of service? I can tell you the most common one is somebody will give minority opinion and the chairperson will say, does anybody want to change their vote? That language should be outlawed in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't care if you want to change your vote. And just because one person wants to change their vote, we're going to have a new vote? That's not minority opinion. That's like anarchy. I'm not saying you have to have a strict reconsideration process. But the easiest way to avoid this, if you're in service at the group, district, or area level, or in a group level, is that after there's minority opinion, to help the crowd and say, would anyone like to make a motion that we reconsider this item? Now, the difficulty you're going to get in is if you don't have a process in your guidelines for this, because then you can get into an argument over, is it a majority vote or a two-thirds vote? So it's better in a district area, in a group steering committee setting, that you've already discussed this and have a group conscience on reconsideration. But that is reconsideration. And the minority opinion is super, super important. Right of appeal and petition is really about a board member or a staff member or a trustee not agreeing with a decision that one of the affiliate boards or a trustees committee or the general service board itself made. And disagreeing with it so much that you send a minority opinion in and say to probably the chair of the General Service Board, I think the General Service Conference should decide this. It's too grave an issue. And I would think at that point, the General Service Board chair would bring it to the General Service Board and say, does our decision stick or should we send this to the conference? Now, This plays out in a lot of different ways at the conference level or at the level of the office and the staff and the committees. I was just talking about something. In fact, hold on 1 second because I'm going to grab something. It's easier to do visual demonstration than it is sometimes to try to describe something. I wish I had this when I was away last week because I was on a Zoom this weekend where people were saying that unless you toe the line and you always agree with everyone else, you'll never become a trustee or a director. And that is just simply not true. And I just want to let everyone out there know that. Okay, there's no litmus test. It's based on your service experience and maybe some of your professional experience, but there is no litmus test. But in 2003, the board decided, or the conference decided, that the book Inmate to Inmate, AA in Prison, Inmate to Inmate, should be relooked at and the stories updated and some new stories put in. Which means that the Trustees Corrections Committee needed to ask for new stories to be sent in. And this Trustees Corrections Committee also asked for two appointed committee members to serve on that committee to help the trustees out with selecting these new stories. It was a lot of work. I happened to be one of the two people. That's when I was selected to be an appointed committee member. A lot of people don't know this because we're so caught up with the plain language big book, but I'll just, so you have it in your AA experience. At the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, there was a Class A trustee who became chair of the board named Jim Estelle. He also was the director of the Texas prison system. The plain language big book is not the first book to have plain or simple language. That is such a bad information inside Alcoholics Anonymous. There's all kinds of things regarding plain and simple language. There's the actual language used, but there's also the format on the pages that people and experts know that if someone who has a low reading level opens a book and the font is too small, they don't want to look at it again. If they open a book and there's not enough white space between the lines or room on the page, it looks very difficult to read just by looking at it. A lot of corrections pamphlets and this book, AA in Prison, Inmate to Inmate, were reformatted in the early 90s. So we do all this work. It's 2 years of work. And then in the third year, the conference approved the book we sent to them. And I remember when I walked into the room, it was an October board meeting into the corrections committee. They had all the new books. This is it right here. This is an absolute collector's item, this book right here. All the new books were sitting in the middle of the table so we could be proud of our work and look at them. It was the first time anyone got to see them. And I remember when I opened it up, my like heart sank. And I started to have like a panic attack because it was half the size of the book it replaced. All the font corrections were reduced. All the white space was removed. And when we asked why, it was because of cost. It was cheaper to print it this way. And I remember that day I was heartbroken. And I remember I made a motion and said, I think we should reject and not sell this book, like not use it. I don't care how many we just printed. Like, it's not usable. There's a reason we changed everything in the format in the early 90s. Now, I lost that vote. By the way, I lost it like 8-1. But it sat on my mind for weeks. And, you know, someone reminded me that I fell within the description of being entitled to send in a right of appeal, because it says whether in our staffs, committees, corporate boards, or trustees. And I was on a committee. I was on a trustees committee. And I wrote a letter to the General Service Board and said, I think we've made a grave mistake. And we did all this 3 years of work. Why would we not want as many people to be encouraged to read it as possible? The General Service Board did not order the Corrections Committee to change it, but did officially send it to the Corrections Committee, asking them to relook at this question. At the next board meeting, we had another discussion, and then we voted to not use the books we had printed. So this book right here that you can see, look at the replacement book. It's more than double the size. I will remind you of what the print looked like in this one. And then you can see this one. And so when people tell me that the minority opinion doesn't work, or like if you serve on a committee at GSO and you don't agree with everyone else, like I became a non-trustee director 2 years after that. I became a trustee 4 years after that. Like, if you think an error is grave and you're serving at that level, you have a duty to bring it to someone's attention. Now, I think the difficulty we have in today's AA today is that people are under the mistaken impression that anybody can appeal a conference action. That's really not true. You could send in a new agenda item asking the committee to relook at the decision, but that's very different than sending in an appeal. And right now, even though I think, I don't know who saw the last board minutes, there looked like there was 20 letters about the plain language big book, but none from anybody that's below the level of the conference on the upside down triangle. And I would tell you that maybe someone needs to send in that agenda item. I'm not saying that, you know, every member of AA should be able to individually appeal a conference action. But maybe we need another process. Maybe if an area had a two-thirds vote and thought that the conference was wrong, that an area could send in an appeal. I don't know, but the amount of appeals we're seeing and people getting mad because they don't realize it, I just wish more people would realize it, that the only people who have that right of petition and appeal are those below the conference level in the upside down triangle. Now, the other thing I want to talk about is this. You don't always have to win to win. And I know that goes against all alcoholic thinking, you know, that you have to win big, and the people who are against you have to feel horrible that they were wrong. That's the way a lot of us tend to operate, myself included, right? It's not good enough that I win. I need everyone else to really publicly acknowledge that they're wrong, right? But the truth is, you don't, sometimes, if you use the term shot across the bow, sometimes just by bringing something to light, you might not get the exact result you wanted, but there's nothing bad about having discussion. People that know me know I always talk about, you know, when I decided to write that letter, and there's another one I wrote after that, two while I was in my 12 years, which I don't think is that bad. But when I decided to write that letter, I based it on a letter. I'm trying to think of the exact date of her letter. I know when it was December 5th, 1997. past trustee Gay G of the Southeast region was unhappy with the money in the San Diego convention. She was unhappy that the General Service Board had taken $600,000 of cash, check, whatever you want to call it, a wire, whatever, from the city of San Diego. What she was real upset with is the lack of transparency in that transaction. Really taking the money based on the contract was not that big a deal. Some of you might know that we start looking at the next international convention 14 years ahead of time. When San Diego won the bid for the international convention, there was no light rail in San Diego. And that was a problem because San Diego at that time did not have a baseball stadium downtown like it does now. Their stadium was called the Murph, Jack Murphy Stadium, and was a considerable 20 or 25 minutes outside of downtown San Diego. The city promised that their light rail would be done, but they put in the contract. If it was not done, the city would pay for buses to take everyone from downtown to Jack Murphy Stadium. On its own, based on all of our policies, there is nothing wrong with that. We take one comp room per 50 rooms we sell. Most AA conventions do that. The General Service Board has a policy that's been approved by the conference. We take discounts as long as everyone else gets them. We don't take AA-only discounts. We're the same fiduciary responsibilities as any other leaders in any other organization. We don't waste AA money. So there's nothing bad about this contractual agreement. What was bad is when the General Service Board published the financial results of the 1995 convention, instead of showing $1.4 million for transportation expense, they just showed $800,000 and just netted out the $600,000 they took from the city. Because what had happened is the city notified the General Service Board that the city of San Diego and the state of California has a lot of rules about awarding work to companies so that friends and family and corruption and everything else. They have a long process for like giving a contract out for $600,000 worth of buses. So the city said to the General Service Board, you don't have those same restrictions. You have enough time to get bids from a bus company or two or three and choose who you're going to hire. If you do that, we'll just pay for it. And that's what happened. It was $600,000. But on the financial results sent out to the fellowship, instead of showing $1.4 million for transportation and $600,000 coming in from the city, for whatever reason, and we don't know who really did it, but they decided to just show $800,000. That way they wouldn't have to show the $600,000 that came in from the city. Gay, some people here might have met her, but she was a force of nature. She was a real dynamo trusted servant. And she filed a very famous appeal. It's dated December 5th, 1997. If you want a copy from me, all you have to do is email. I'm not going to have it posted in any link. It's not for public posting. It's not for reprinting. But if you'd like to see a sample of what I consider to be one of the best minority appeals ever written, I'd be glad to send it to you. But it does have the GSO wording on it, not for posting, not for reprinting. Gay's item never made it to a vote. But it was the hotly contested issue at the 97 General Service Conference, the 98, and the 99. I was at the 99. But I can tell you what it did do. The treasurer of the General Service Board came out on the floor of the conference and made an announcement and said to everybody present, "We have heard you loud and clear. The way we reported this, taking the cash incentive without reporting it to the fellowship, is obviously something that has caused much disunity inside the fellowship. And the General Service Board has decided that we will not do this again. And we will have a policy that we will take discounts when other people get them, but we will fully report them." And the General Service Board does have that policy still till today. But I just say that because Gay did not, it didn't come down to like a vote on the floor. But her letter was just as effective as if it did. Like enough momentum had happened. Another example I can give you for one that I wrote is back in 2008 and 9 when the recessions hit hard. It's not a like big piece of information, but I can tell you that if you look at our contributions from 1935 on, and you look at the record of Wall Street that year, yeah. When the economy is doing better, we get more contributions. When the economy is not doing well, we get less contributions. But one of the things that happened is that the Grapevine decided that they had too much space on the 10th floor at GSO. And they sublet space from AAWS. AAWS held that contract. They held the contract for the 11th floor and the 10th floor. And AA Grapevine just paid AAWS for its rent on the 10th floor. But the Grapevine found smaller space on another floor in the building. And they notified AAWS, "We're no longer going to rent space from you on the 10th floor. We can't afford it." So it's not like we had a lot of money either. So we told the landlord we were looking for a tenant. Now, if you know anything about the inner church building, more than 80% of the tenants have to be nonprofit because the building is nonprofit. So we notified the landlord and we notified real estate agents that we had space available on the 10th floor. Then, like months later, we were at an AAWS meeting and it was reported that we have an answer to our, because once it was empty, we were just paying for the space and getting no use out of it. Some people thought the Grapevine should have to pay for that until we found a new tenant, but that was not the case. That's not what the trustees decided. But one meeting we show up at and a resolution was found. The National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, the NCADD, wanted to move offices in New York City and wanted to sublet our old Grapevine space. And they were willing to pay the same rent. We would lose no money. But, you know, after that meeting, I got thinking and I went back to look at a couple of old articles. Like, the NCADD, when it was originally started, was called the National Council on Alcoholism, the NCA, started by Marty M. And at that time, AA and the board kept very separate from the NCA. That they did a lot of things we don't do. They did governmental studies. They did lobbying. They did education. They did lots of things that we don't do. And the NCADD is not a bad organization by any stretch of the matter. But the more I thought about it, I just thought about, does our fellowship really want the employees of the NCADD going to the same break room and coffee room as our employees? Do they really want them to be borrowing paper and toner and God knows what else? And do they want them to kind of have a shared workspace, even though they have different offices? After reading what I could about way back when, even when Bill W. himself, if you don't know this, Bill W. himself got really into Nicene vitamin B at one time in his life. And he started writing letters on General Service Office stationery about vitamin B and Nicene. And the General Service Board had to tell Bill, stop using our stationery. Some of you have probably seen some Bill W. letters, and it has the big W for Wilson, and then it has the small W for William, and then the small G for Griffith on side of the big W. That's when Bill started using that stationery. But separation has always been important. No affiliation. So I wrote at that time, it didn't have to be a letter, it was an email to the AWS board and said, regardless of the money, we can't do this. It goes against everything we've ever stood for. And at the next AWS meeting, my motion passed unanimously, once people had a chance to think about it. So the minority opinion is very, very important. And like I said, I served 12 years and I wrote two. The concept talks about when there's a grave mistake or decision. Unfortunately, it talks about what those below the conference level can do. It also talks a lot about our third legacy selection of delegates, that unless the majority candidate can pull two-thirds, he must place his name in a hat. With one or more choices of that assembly. By thus drawing lots, the minority candidate has an equal chance with the majority choice. So we have a process in our service manual to start with a whole bunch of candidates, have two votes. After the third one, drop anyone with less than 20% votes. After the fourth one, drop again. And then we have a fourth ballot, and we can go to a fifth. Make a motion to go to a fifth ballot, or we go to the hat. Now, the difficulty with that is, again, the alcoholic mentality. If your name comes out of a hat, you are not chosen by God. I hate to make that kind of public service announcement. It does not mean you were chosen by God, okay? What it means is we left it up to choice because we believe a group conscience is how God speaks. And for electing a delegate, a group conscience would be two-thirds. And what we know is if we have two people or three people in the hat, they each have a lot of votes, just not two-thirds. And any one of them would do well. So I'm going to leave it at that because there's always a lot of questions about minority opinion. And I want to make sure that we have tons of time to get to those questions. I already have some. So I'm going to start with the ones I have. For the recording, the third legacy procedure on page 111 shows candidates with less than 20% are dropped at the second ballot and those with less than one-third at the second. Okay, the person's correcting me. Yes, please go to that page. Please read it. That's exactly what it says there is how it works. Can a person who has voiced a reconsideration speak two or three times with differing thoughts regarding the issue under discussion? So at the General Service Conference, it doesn't matter if it's discussion for reconsideration. Well, there is no discussion for reconsideration. There's minority opinion, and you make a motion. If you're talking about if the minority, if the motion to reconsider passes and debate opens back up, you can get online and get 2 minutes worth as many times as you are willing to go up to that microphone. Now, we give suggestions. Everything needs to be said, but not everyone needs to say it, is the first suggestion. That if someone already said what you were going to say, you don't need to say it in a different way. But I have a more practical advice to AA leaders and future leaders. The more times you go to the microphone, the more times you devalue your voice and thoughts. Because eventually, you are going to go up to the microphone and someone is going to look over and they're going to be like, I can't even listen to another thing that person has to say. Or they're going to say to themselves, does that person need to speak on every single item? Now, believe it or not, we joke around that we don't have first place ribbons anymore and we don't have trophies, right? Everybody's a winner. But back when we did have trophies and we did have ribbons in the outside world, the General Service Conference had the Golden Microphone Award. That was an actual award voted on every year by the delegates. And it is not a compliment to get the Golden Microphone Award. Now, that went away in the mid-90s. But I'm going to tell you, as somebody who's been to the conference 10 times as a voting member, I've seen what happens to people who talk too much at the microphone. And it's sad because what if their 20th time at the microphone, they really had something important to share that no one else has said? So it's more a suggestion of self-awareness and of taking your own inventory. And the other thing is, sometimes you can be online to go to the microphone, and there can be somebody who is 180 degrees different than you, and they have just said something so outlandish at the microphone that you don't need to speak anymore. No one is voting with them. They are done. I've seen that happen at the General Service Conference. I have a reputation for sticking up for marginalized groups, young people, others. It just bothers me when, but I was at the conference when we first debated an atheist agnostic pamphlet before we even got to not even the God word, the God word or whatever they call it now, but the old one, Many Paths to Spirituality. But I was at the early debates at the conference on that. And I remember a delegate getting up to the microphone, and we had a monk that year who was a delegate and at the conference, not dressed in their monk clothes, if that's the right word, or robes. But I remember a delegate getting up to the microphone and saying, you know what, that monk, all the gay groups, all the young people groups, why don't they just go form their own AA? And I remember I walked away from the microphone and just sat down because I knew there's no way anybody could raise their hand to agree with that guy. And I was right. Like, it sailed through. So yes, you could say something 4 times, 8 minutes, wait online every time. But the rule at the conference is everybody online, because there's 3 microphones at the conference usually, right side, left side, and middle aisle. Everybody that hasn't spoken gets to speak before someone who's already spoken. So once you get your 2 minutes in, you can get online all you want, but everybody else online at all microphones speaks before you. Let's see. What is the source for the minority opinion being a motion reconsideration versus a change of vote? The guidelines for the General Service Conference. I read them exactly from the source document. General Service Board meeting minutes. How to access the minutes. Lack of access hinders direct and effective communication, transparency, and accountability. It's a little off topic. I'm a broken record on this. I'll give you a little history and background. Prior to like 2012, some regional trustees sent out the General Service Board minutes and committee minutes to their delegates, and their delegates sent them out to their areas. However, some trustees did not send them out, And I was on the board at that time. We got so sick of hearing of people, the have-nots and the haves. And I remember because I was so fed up with it, and I was still dealing with people who I thought were out of touch with technology, that I remember when I said, probably not in a way that I should have said it, and I had to apologize later. But I said, you know, there is a thing that's been invented. It's called a watermark, you know? And you can put that watermark across all the papers and say, see, because the reason people didn't want to send them out is because they're not approved minutes until the next time the General Service Board meets, which is 3 months later. But it's not like there's national secrets inside those minutes. An executive session, confidential sessions, don't get sent out with those minutes. So the board voted that we would send them out to everybody, right from the office, to every delegate, and we would put a watermark on it, not approved, draft only. And then sometime during COVID, a decision was made to end the AAWS highlights and not send out the General Service Board minutes. Thank God the AAWS highlights have come back, and I've seen them, I guess, for the last year or two. There's still a debate about these minutes. I hope it gets sorted out. There's nothing secret in there. I think in today's world of information, people want to see it even more than in 2012. But that's up to the current group conscience. Here's a good question, and this is one to really keep thought of. What about those who are always in a minority opinion, but never actually participate in the actual discussion? Yeah, I have a few thoughts about that. Number one, that's kind of like the definition of gaslighting, if I was going to write the definition of gaslighting. Like, you don't save your favorite, like, discussion point for minority opinion. If you have something really valuable to say, say it during the regular discussion. Let everybody think about it. Don't try to waste everybody's time and have a vote and then have something so important to say that it might change and make a reconsideration. The other thing I would say is, I think every group conscience in AA, and I'm not talking about the board and the conference and the assembly, every group, every district seems to sometimes have people who like to show up at the meeting and everything is going just fine. And then they pull a pin out of a grenade and throw it into the middle of the room with what they're about to say and enjoy kind of upsetting the whole apple cart. You know, here's what's dangerous about that. It's obviously not good for the person who constantly has to do that. But it's really bad for AA, and I'm going to give a personal example of this. If you are the person who every week or meeting shows up and conducts themselves like that, the same thing is going to happen as what I talked about as the person who would get the Golden Microphone Award. People will stop listening to you. My experience when I was a finance chair a long time ago, and I served in an area that's one of the few areas that the intergroup and the central office is part of the area and reports to the finance committee. And somebody that would be labeled as a troublemaker was showing up at every finance committee meeting and was always had their issue of the month that they went off the deep end about. Now, what's scary is one of those issues was true. And for a couple of months, they were raising this issue, and none of us, including myself, paid attention. Because how could you keep up with their long list of complaints? And I will tell you that 3 months later, that issue blew up that this person said was going to blow up that we all just discounted because they were the person who came angry to every meeting. And so I will tell you that you still have to listen carefully to what somebody has to say. But there's so many great AA future leaders and current leaders. And I don't fall into either of those categories anymore. But if you take the time to read our literature and read our history and go to service events and workshops, don't devalue yourself. Don't let other people think that just because you have to talk all the time that you're not making a solid point. You really have to decide to choose your battles. You know, which mountain do you really want to die on? Even when the General Service Conference agenda comes out, which ones are life-shattering to you? Which ones do you really, really either feel really for or really against? Those are the ones that you really have to decide and be prepared to speak on. The other thing I would tell you, just a suggestion, there's a lot of people here who are involved in area service and probably people who are involved in intergroup service. And at districts, we tend not to have people lined up at the microphone and you're sitting around a table. It's a little bit more conversational. But at an area or sometimes an intergroup, there's a microphone that you got to get up and get online. And you got to stand there. When they call on you, you got to say your name and your service position. That can be frightening to a lot of people. It can be intimidating to a lot of people. So I just want to tell you that, number one, don't go up with a service manual in your hand. That sets a bad tone right from the start, okay? Nobody wants to be told that you're the only person that reads the service manual, okay? So when you go up there with the service manual, you are kind of inferring to everyone, thank God I read the service manual, so let me tell you everything that's in there. So that's a bad idea. Number two is don't write out a long script. Take a small piece of paper or an index card, put two or three bullet points on there to just remind yourself what you wanted to talk about. And then when the chair recognizes you and you say your name's Billy and, you know, you're the area, whatever, you can just look down at your card and talk about your first bullet point. You might not get to your second or third, but it'll alleviate your fear of going up to the microphone. The other thing about this is that we have to be respectful. We have to encourage everyone to have a voice, from the loudest to the quietest. And what we do or say or act as AA leaders can have an effect on people. One of my favorite stories I tell is a man named John S. John S. came from Ireland to America, and when he stood for trustee, his business experience was that he was part owner of an Irish bar. That is not a joke. Like, he got elected Northeast Regional Trustee. He drove a truck for the telephone company, and he owned an Irish bar. He was one of the greatest members of AA I ever met. He lived in my area on the shore, on the Jersey Shore, when I moved there. I don't think I ever heard him as a past trustee ever go up to the microphone. And there were two trustees, John Q and John S. They were like the greatest example of heterosexual male friendship I've ever seen in my life. Like, John Q is still alive and bought the grave next to John S, just to put it into perspective. Like, they would, and they served as trustees together, one as a regional, one as an at-large. Just a great AA story. But I was at an assembly where the new DCM coordinator, she had just been elected, and at her first meeting talked about how she was brave. She was going to do something different. And we all know how that goes over in AA service sometimes. And she wanted to try something new. And she was really proud of her idea. I was in that room. And unfortunately, a past delegate went up to the microphone and said his name was so and so. And like all past delegates, we love to throw out a panel number. He was a panel number, whatever, past delegate to the General Service Conference. And he basically took her head off. He basically went up one side and down another. And was a real good lesson for me because I remember looking at her and seeing like all of her energy and her pride like just leave her face. And I'll never forget, it's the only time I ever heard John S. go up to the microphone at that assembly and say, "My name is John. I'm a past panel, whatever, delegate to the General Service Conference, and I'm a past Northeast Regional Trustee." And he said, "Young lady, I just want to thank you for that awesome report. And I really want to thank you for suggesting something new that we haven't tried before. And if it works, that'll be great. And if it doesn't, maybe you'll come back with another idea and we can try something new." And watching everything that I just saw leave her face return. And that is the job, we walk a fine line. We're committed to AA, but our job is to encourage people to follow behind us and serve Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's all I have. Thanks, Brooke. Have a great. Wait, is there one question if I can shoot it out quick?
Sure, go for it.
I'm interested in what you said about the outstanding. I will put my email to everybody if you want that minority opinion letter about the International Convention. Just email me and I'll send it to you. Thanks, Brooke. Have a good night.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.